AP Radio News. I'm Tim McGuire. People in the eastern part of the country get a one-day break from the cold Arctic air. The
cold air comes back in tonight and will be much colder Monday into Tuesday, ahead of the next Arctic front. So the cold air comes back in again, not as brutally cold as this past week.
National Weather Service meteorologist Jim Hayes. Latest storm to move through the east brought snow, then freezing rain, sleet, and plain old rain to Tennessee, Kentucky, and the Mid-Atlantic overnight. Tennessee Emergency Management spokesman Dean Fleener says they're trying to get a handle on how much damage has been caused to the state by the back-to-back storms.
Power poles just snapped right in half. So it is the cold, it's the wind, it's the water, and the ice and the snow.
At least two people are dead. Several others have been hurt in an explosion in Ukraine's second-largest city. AP's Jim Hines reports the explosion happened during a parade to mark the one-year anniversary of the ouster of Ukraine's former pro-Russian president.
The Ukrainian Interior Ministry says the blast was due to an unidentified explosive device, presumably meaning a bomb, but who laid it or other details are not yet clear. The Interior Ministry says it's considering this to be a terrorist act.
Fighting in Ukraine since the change in government has taken some 5,300 lives. An AP GFK poll finds that most people questioned think the rich aren't taxed enough and the middle class is taxed too much. A majority also say they personally are paying too much to the federal government. Most of those questioned also support President Obama's proposal to raise investment taxes on high-income families. An upstate New York teen who gained some fame last fall over his senior portrait depicting him, his cat, and lasers has died. Draven Rodriguez's parents tell the Times Union of Albany their 17-year-old son committed suicide Thursday at their home in Schenectady. This is AP Radio News. The Academy Awards tonight. AP Entertainment editor Oscar Wells Gabriel reports on front runner for lead actor honors.
He's saying love is absolute.
Yes! Yes!
It's one of the themes running through this year's Oscars. Michael Keaton finally getting some love from the Academy after a long career and playing an actor whose career has had his ups and downs to boot. Keaton says he has lived the life of the guy he plays in Birdman.
I worked real hard, and when I say worked real hard, I'm not inside the business. I had to work from the time I was 13.
And now that he's considered a frontrunner, Keaton isn't so much worried about winning as he is in just savoring the moment.
Have a lot of fun, man. Bring the family out, and, we're gonna have a lot of laughs.
His competition for Best Actor includes Steve Carell, Benedict Cumberbatch, Bradley Cooper, and Eddie Redmayne. Previewing the Oscars, I'm Oscar Wells Gabriel.
Dubious honors for a couple of Camerons. Cameron Diaz and Kirk Cameron take the Razzies as the year's worst actress and actor. I'm Tim McGuire. AP Radio News.
You're so annoying.
You're so annoying.
Stop copying
me. Stop copying me.
Mom, tell her to stop copying me.
Mom, tell her to stop talking me.
Kids will spend 10 minutes copying everything their sibling says.
You're such a doofus.
You're such a doofus.
How about 2 minutes to brush their teeth? Brushing for 2 minutes now can save your child from severe tooth pain later. For fun 2-minute videos to watch while brushing, visit 2min2x.org. 2 minutes, twice a day. I have the time.
Mom!
A message from the Partnership for Healthy Mouths, Healthy Lives, and the Ad Council.
The West Point Society of Washington, D.C., supported by alumni, sponsors, and individuals, is preparing their 8th Annual Leadership and Ethics Conference for D.C. Metro Area 11th graders, March 19th at the George Mason University Arlington campus. Students will learn about this year's theme of What Does Living an Honorable Life Look Like? From members of America's current greatest generation, including ROTC and West Point cadets, as well as recent graduates serving the nation. For more information, search West Point Ethics and Leadership on Facebook.
Let's celebrate. Celebrate the survivors. Celebrate the progress made. On Saturday, May 9th, Mother's Day weekend, join the Komen DC Race for the Cure on the National Mall. The annual 5K walk-run is an event the whole family can enjoy. Komen has invested over $35 million in the National Capital Region, and with your help, they can continue to fund life-saving breast cancer screenings, treatment, and services. For more information and to register, visit KomenDCRaceForTheCure.org.
This is Mark Amtower. If you're looking for cost-effective and efficient methods for marketing your products or services to the government or to other government contractors, look to LinkedIn. There are over 400,000 members in the D.C. area and more than 92 million nationwide, but only a small percentage actually use it well. I can show you how to leverage LinkedIn in ways that support your marketing, sales, and business development efforts. I do this for large and small companies, and I can do it for you. Drop me a line at mark@federaldirect.net.
This paid commercial may not represent the views of Hubbard Broadcasting Incorporated or Federal News Radio. Statements and opinions of this broadcast are solely those of individual contributors or advertisers as indicated. Federal News Radio does not take responsibility for those statements or opinions and accepts no responsibility or liability for any inaccuracy, errors, or omissions reported during this program.
Welcome to Executive Leaders Radio. In this hour, you'll hear directly from our region's finest business leaders. Through each of the interviews, these high-achieving leaders become relatable role models who share how they were able to build their enterprise, their personal secrets of success, about leadership styles and opportunities that lie ahead. Prepare to be inspired and entertained and to hear wisdom unheard elsewhere. Executive Leaders Radio.
You're listening to Executive Leaders Radio, broadcast from the Tyson's Corner offices of Offutt Kerman. This is your host, Dana Theist of InPowerCoaching.com, with my co-hosts, a roundtable today of Lauren Rizzo of Cressa, Joe Applebaum, Potomac Companies, Katie Jordan, Verisolve, Mark Cohen, Optifor, and Mike Mercurio, Offutt Kerman. Mark, would you tell us who our guests are today?
Sure, Dana. We have a great lineup. First is Linda Mann, the co-founder and president of YouthQuest Foundation. Second is Mark Sissel, the CEO of Katz Abosch. Third is Dennis Kelly, CEO of AT Solutions, and we'll wrap up with Bill Millward, President and CEO of Addicts Corporation.
Thank you. Let's start with Linda Mann, co-founder and president of the YouthQuest Foundation. Linda, tell us, what is the YouthQuest Foundation?
Well, good morning, Dana. The YouthQuest Foundation is a 501c3. Our focus is on high school dropouts. The dropout rate is 30% and has been since 1970. And we're looking to teach these young people to make better decisions, teaching them critical thinking, problem solving, and teaching them that failure isn't final. It's just the beginning, not the end.
I'm curious why you co-founded this organization. So obviously it's important to you.
Yes.
Why high school dropouts particularly? Were you a high school dropout yourself?
I was not, and it actually took me a while to figure this out. But as it turns out, on reflection, my grandmother, my mother, and my sisters all dropped out of high school. And so that's one of the motivating things for me, is to help folks understand that there are lots of options in their lives and they can make some choices that will take them to a better life.
Well, and you said failure isn't final. You must have learned that lesson early yourself, I'm suspecting, to stay in high school.
Yes, that's true. I grew up in a rather chaotic home. And for me, one of the things early on I decided was that that's not the life that I wanted for myself, and that I saw things around me that I didn't want to have as an adult. And so I made a conscious decision that that wasn't going to be me.
You said you grew up in a chaotic life. What were mom and dad doing that made it so chaotic?
Well, that's kind of hard to explain. My parents divorced when I was 6 months old, and at that point, and I never did meet my father. And as it turns out, as I've grown through adulthood, I've discovered I actually have 9 siblings. I didn't even know about one of them until about a month ago. And so it's been, for me, a journey to find my sisters and brothers. They're all half-sisters and brothers. And to see where they are and what they're doing and trying to create some sense of family around that, because mm-hmm. it's something we didn't have.
And you mentioned earlier in the same vein that stability became very important to you.
Yes.
That took you out of high school into a very stable and yet not stable environment. Tell us, how did you get into the Army anyway?
Well, for me, I was looking for an opportunity to expand my education. I went to a state junior college, so I did have a 2-year degree. But I wanted something more, and not just education, but I also was looking for stability. I was looking for discipline, not just physical discipline, like when you get up and that kind of thing, but also mental discipline, the ability to make good decisions and stay true to those decisions.
But you told a good story about someone who did a very nice thing for you to get you into the Army instead of the Air Force.
Absolutely. When I went to see the recruiter for the Air Force, I had tested and I came back to see him. And when I asked him the results of my test, he said, well, I'm not going to take you. And I was taken aback, and he said, your scores are too high.
Too high for the Air Force?
Well, no. they were too high, and what he meant by that was that with a two-year college degree, I could only enlist. I couldn't become an officer. So he sent me to the Army because with my two-year degree, I could go to officer candidate school. And that decision on his part changed my life.
Wow.
And, well, it opened just wonderful opportunities for me. Not that being an NCO was a bad thing, because it was a great thing, because I started out, I spent 2 years as an enlisted woman. But it gave me the opportunity to lead in grand ways that I never thought I would have the opportunity to do. It gave me the opportunity to influence policy and help key decisions at senior levels. And that was very exciting to me.
What's been the emotions of finding your long-lost family, your siblings?
Well, actually, just last month, I met a sister that I only found about a year ago. And so connecting with her was amazing. We share the same father. And when I talked with her, I discovered I also have another brother that I didn't even know I had. And so it's somewhat disconcerting in a way, because we're sort of tossed to the winds. But it's also comforting to know that we can come back together.
Sometimes, often, there's pushback from family when a child or sibling wants to better themselves. How did your family respond when you decided to go to college and join the Navy?
Actually, they didn't take it real well. My parents wanted me to, when I went to junior college, they wanted me to learn how to take shorthand and do things that were typical to women. And I really wanted to do something different. As my career progressed, I went into, I learned a lot about occupational education, which is what my bachelor's degree is in. And today we work with 3D printing with these at-risk kids to help them learn how to critically think about what they're trying to design, when it doesn't come out quite right, to problem solve what happened. And so that whole arena of what you can do vocationally is pretty cool.
So I'm interested in your experience in the Army and how that helped prepare you for helping these at-risk kids. Now, is there a story you can think of maybe somebody you helped, a younger person in the Army, that may have translated now to what you're doing for at-risk kids?
Well, actually, when I was in the military, I was assigned, one of my last assignments was at the National Guard Bureau, and I was actually on the team that started the National Guard Youth Challenge Program, which is focused entirely on high school dropouts, and it's a residential program that is holistic. They go to school to get a GED. They look at health and hygiene and all those other cool things, and so helping start that was just an amazing opportunity. And I still work with that program today because many of our kids come out of that program.
Linda, somewhere in the country, there's probably an at-risk teen listening to you right now who's either dropped out or thinking about dropping out of high school. What would you tell that person?
Well, my first comment is, be sure you're talking to your counselors and your teachers to make sure that they understand whatever is missing for you is something that could possibly be replaced. A lot of times kids drop out of school because their parents are not supportive of learning. They don't understand how critical it is for children to learn basic things at an early age. And so they've not developed this love of learning, which is, we find, critical to the dropout. So if there's a counselor or a teacher that they particularly relate to, I would really strongly recommend that they develop a relationship with that person and see if there's a way that they can reinvigorate themselves in that environment. Staying home, being truant, running with the wrong crowds are going to take you down a really, really, really bad path. And you don't want to end up in prison. 67% of the prison population is made up of high school dropouts. And oh, by the way, for those of us that are taxpaying citizens, that costs us about $540 billion a year. So there's a business case, but there's also the lost potential case for these kids as well. So talk to somebody that you trust, you feel good with, that can help you get back on track in school.
You've overcome many challenges in your life. What's the next challenge, and where do you see yourself in 5 years?
Well, We are in the process of launching a pilot with the Girls and Boys Clubs with our program. 3D printing is sexy. The kids really like it. But for us, it's a great teaching mechanism, and it's easy to do. So we have developed a curriculum that's very translatable to other at-risk environments. So we're hoping that we can take this nationally. We're also looking at working with the Girl Scouts and underserved communities for their STEM journey that will help them have the opportunity to think more clearly about the decisions they make as they're growing up.
You have a big fundraiser coming up, but you also, I'd like you to tell us about it, but I'd also like you to tell us about when you were 5 years old and discovered that you liked to fundraise.
Well, that's really interesting. I was recently interviewed for something with the March of Dimes, and she asked me about this, and I recalled being about 5 or 6 years old, and I had the little tin can with a little slot in the top, and we went around the neighborhood collecting dimes for the March of Dimes, because that's how it actually launched, was they were really looking for dimes. And so we would have a competition among all the kids to see who could get the most dimes in their can. Whichever one weighed the most won. So I've been doing this kind of stuff a long time, on and off, because I think it's really important to give back to your community in the ways that are right for you.
And the fundraiser you have coming up, where is it?
We're actually having a golf tournament at Trump National out in Lowe's Island, and it's on the 10th of August, and it's going to be a grand event this year, lots and lots of fun. Everybody, we have a huge returning base. Everybody that plays always comes back, but we're always looking for more. So please go to our website if you're interested in information about what we do. There's some great videos of the kids with the 3D printers. It's www.youthquestfoundation.org. And of course, we'd always be happy to accept your donation.
This is Dana Theis. I'd like to thank my co-hosts on this particular round, Lauren Rizzo and Mark Cohen and Mike Mercurio, for asking wonderful questions. I hope you'll visit our website, executiveleadersradio.com, to learn more about our executive leaders. We'll be back in just a moment, right after this Business Spotlight.
And your name is?
Dana Theis with EmpowerCoaching.com.
And what makes EmpowerCoaching.com special?
Well, we help mid-level and senior leaders turn professional success into personal development.
Tell me more about that. What do you mean?
Well, today, leaders to succeed at any level need to master soft skills. They need to be able to manage and lead people at all levels, and that means they have to get along with people.
Mm-hmm.
Well, they also need to master the process of learning to get along with people, and that's what we support them to do.
And you're supporting who to work better or to do what?
Well, for example, a professional who aspires to be in a senior leadership position needs to be able to negotiate their relationships with their staff, with their superior, with their peers. They need to communicate confidently in all kinds of formats, you know, one-on-one and in meetings. And we give them the resources to learn to do that and then be better at it.
And these resources are both one-on-one as well as online?
Yeah, we have a lot of programs online because this kind of support is usually cost prohibitive, and we make it very affordable by providing a lot of online resources as well as personal support.
How can I learn more about what you're offering and get in contact with you? Is there a website address?
InPowerCoaching.com. That's I-N, PowerCoaching.com.
All right, excellent. And your name again is?
Dana Theis.
This has been your Business Spotlight.
This is Peter Schwartz with Vistage International, and this is your Business Spotlight. Joining me for this segment is Doug Kay, who is a principal with a firm called Offit Kerman. What is Offit Kerman, Doug?
Offit Kerman is a full-service law firm in the Mid-Atlantic region with offices from Philadelphia all the way down to Tysons Corner, Virginia, where I work.
Right. And you're a lawyer with the firm?
I'm a lawyer with the firm.
What practice area do you specialize in?
I mostly do work in commercial litigation, although I also do work with in doing criminal defense and personal injury, anything that gets me to trial.
Anything that gets you to trial. Well, why do your customers appreciate you?
I think they appreciate me because I am a careful and sympathetic listener, and I try to offer concrete solutions to their most vexing legal problems.
Well, give us an example. Do you have, without mentioning specifics, a recent example of where you were really good at this? How about your favorite client up till now, without getting into two particulars there?
Well, I represented a fellow who was in a commercial lease, and the landlord was determined to make him pay more than he should have been paying. And we had to go to court, and we had to go go all the way through trial, and the client really appreciated the effort, and we got an excellent result for the client. And that was very satisfying, and since then he's been talking me up all over town, so I can't thank him enough.
Yeah. What's the best part of practicing law for you?
I would say that it is taking people through difficult circumstances when they think they don't have any options and trying to find a good solution for them.
Right. What's the website address for the law firm?
www.offutkerman.com.
Thank you. We've been speaking with Doug Kay, who's the principal with Offutt Kerman. This is Peter Schwartz, and that was your Business Spotlight.
We're back, and you're listening to Executive Leaders Radio. This is your host, Dana Theus, with my co-hosts, Mark Cohen, Lauren Rizzo, Joe Applebaum, Katie Jordan, and Mike Mercurio. We're having a good time here. Next up, we have Mark Sissel, CEO of Katz Abosch. Katz Abosch.
Correct.
Mark, what is Katz Abosch?
We are a middle market regional CPA firm that serves advisory consulting and compliance services for middle market companies in the Baltimore, Washington region, typically companies with $30 million to $300 million in revenue and that are closely held.
And how big or small is Katz Abosch?
We have approximately 100 people, about 75 CPAs.
And you were telling us earlier you didn't found the company, but you've been with it for a long time and grew up with it.
Yes, I'm an old guy. No, I've been here. This May will be 30 years for me. I started with the firm in May of 1985.
So, and you had a lot of drive to help grow the firm in that time. And you were telling us where that drive first came out when you were a kid. You didn't just play one sport. No.
Actually, I think we had talked that I said three, but actually it was four. I actually played on several very good championship basketball teams, but unfortunately, by the time I was 14, I didn't grow much further in height, and I couldn't jump too well. So when I went to high school, they said, sorry, Mark, you can't make the basketball team. So I chose between football in the fall and baseball in the spring, wrestling in the wintertime.
So you didn't just take no for an answer, apparently.
No.
What were mom and dad doing when you were?
Mom and dad, I grew up, I have to tell you the truth. I really grew up in almost an Ozzie and Harriet type family. My parents, both middle class. My father worked for the government. My mom was a waitress at my uncle's restaurant, and were married until the time my father passed away. And the one thing I will always remember in any case, they were always there for me. I don't think there was ever a game that I played that my father wasn't there.
So where did this intensity and drive that you have come from this idyllic Ozzie and Harriet world?
I don't know. Part of it, truthfully, is trying to prove to my father that I could do it. Not in the sense that he was not optimistic about it, but he grew up in a difficult scenario when he was growing up, single parent mother raising them, and she was a salesperson at a Baltimore store called Hustlers.
This is your grandmother?
That's my grandmother.
Your grandmother was a hustler.
She was, yeah. She was a hustler. Yes, she was. But he was very concerned about security. Having the next meal on the table or the next paycheck. And I think that's one of the reasons, frankly, why both he and my aunt, his sister, went to work in the government area. So he was always, not that he wasn't proud or didn't think he could do it. He's like, are you sure you want to go out and branch out and do that? What if it doesn't work? You know, come to work for the government. If you work for the government, you have this, this, and this. And so I spent a good part of my life as close as we were before. And certainly, he's been gone now for several years. But you know, trying to prove him, see, I told you I could do it.
So why did you end up in accounting with all this drive and sports in high school and so on?
Interesting story again. Going back to my father, when I was ready to go to college, he sat me down and said, "You know, if you want to go out of state, and if we could afford it, which meant taking loans out." If we can afford it, you will study something such as accounting or engineering where you can get a job when you graduate. And if you want to be an English major or a history major, which is fine, he said you can, you know, go to a local college and commute. And I said, you know, I really want to go away. I want to give it a shot. I haven't been away before. And accounting seemed, believe it or not, interesting. It did. Working with businesses seemed interesting. And I said, okay, I'm going to give that a shot. And from the time I was 18 on, didn't look back.
So spool the reel forward. You have children of your own now.
Yes.
What's happening with them in college?
All went to state universities. I gave the same speech to them that my father gave to me. One is a high school biology teacher. She'll be 25 this year. She's at Good Counsel, which is a local Catholic school. And my middle daughter is actually in retail, like my grandmother, her great-grandmother, and she has actually started her own business, fashion business, where she is presently and has made sales already. She was 23 yesterday on the internet, you know, selling women's clothes. So we think that's pretty cool. She wants to one day have her own boutique store.
So you describe this childhood of playing all these sports and trying to prove it yourself to your father, and sounds like such an intense person, mm-hmm. and yet you're sitting here calm and relaxed. Did you have a turning point in your life that taught you a little lesson about intensity?
Several years ago, when I was 47, I had 95% blockage in, I guess it's the right artery. I'm still not really sure about that. It's not the Widowmaker, thank goodness. That was a definite turning point in my life, because I realized at that point that any day, at any time, we don't know what's going to happen to us from a health perspective. I happen to be very fortunate in that it was caught in time. And since then, with proper diet and exercise and medication, you know, thank God, 8 years later, I'm here. But that was definitely a turning point for me.
I'm very curious, what has that experience taught you about leading a company, mm-hmm. and leading employees who have experiences like that in their lives?
Quite a bit. I would say foremost is that, number one, you're not always right. Okay,
and just because you're the leader.
Not only are you not right, but that when you delegate to people and you hire good people around you, you try things, you work at things, you try and make things better and happen and to reach your goal, but it doesn't always work. I believe it was Jack Welch who said, I'd rather have the CEO that's right 60 or 70% of the time than the CEO who's right 100% of the time. And part of, I think, that is very simply is you've got to take risks. You have to take chances. You have to, you know, look at opportunity square in the face and say, look, let's give this a shot. If it doesn't work, it doesn't work. We'll move on to the next item and we'll try something else. But if you're going to be living in that where you're micromanaging and you're living in fear and that, hey, I've got to make 100% sure this is going to work, by the time you're 100% sure, the opportunity might have passed.
And do you find yourself having to mentor a lot of people in your company not to make mistakes, but...
That's the fun part. That is the fun part. And I would say one of the things that I have the most fun mentoring, and most of the young people don't see it in me because they didn't work with me 20 years ago, I'll say, relax. If this happens or that happens, it's not the end of the world. We can fix it. If we can't fix it, we'll move on to something else. And they look at me like, you're kidding me, right? No, I'm not kidding you. And some of the people that are still working with me that were there 30 years ago, you know, can't believe it either. But that's, to me, the real fun of my job is to be able to mentor people and to work with the younger people and to bring them along. I'm already looking at this point for my successor. I think that's one of the most important things that I can do is find my successor so that the firm can move forward in the future as well.
Mark, in a lot of companies that have strong founders that have influenced the culture and the business, how's it been taking over for them? And then, you know, just about your succession plans, how's that going to go as well?
Well, that's really interesting because, you know, in a relatively small organization, 100 people, we all know each other. I grew up with Alvin Katz and John Abosch, who founded the company in 1969. I was 25 when I started there. They were in their early 40s. So I grew up with them. And I got to tell you, it's difficult. It was difficult. And I'll tell you this, I think it was more difficult for me than it was for them. Because I was concerned, am I doing what's right? Am I doing what they would have done? What if I tarnished the name? What if something happens to what they built?
That's a lot of pressure.
And it's not, I'm not talking about securing the world or anything that is life-threatening. I certainly understand that. But to me, I grew up with these guys. These were two real-life figures, and I'm saying I don't want to screw up. I don't want them to say, what happened to my business?
Mark, what's the website?
www.katzabosch.com.
This is Dana Theis. Don't forget to visit our website, executiveleadersradio.com, to learn more about our executive leaders. We'll be back in a minute after this business spotlight. Joining us for this business spotlight is Wes Burnett, partner at Optifor. Wes, what is Optifor?
Optifor is a securities firm that integrates legal, tax, and financial and risk in order to offer optimal results for clients.
Who's your perfect client?
Perfect client is someone who actually would like to combine services, make their life simpler, and is very family-oriented. Our firm itself is very family-oriented. We love helping families take care of their own, and that can be multi-generational.
So what would a family need when they would come to you?
Typically, what they're doing is trying to simplify their personal life by trying to have somebody else worry about their legal and their tax and financial affairs and present them with solutions rather than questions.
Solutions rather than questions. So give us an example of a good solution.
A good solution is something that results, for example, in the lowest tax bill, the greatest savings, and taking care of the values important to the family, like saving for college for children or grandchildren or something along those lines.
So what do you enjoy most about your work?
My clients. Although a second place, the close would be my staff, because I recruit very specifically people who have the same values as our clients. So we truly are very involved with our clients' lives, and they are family to us.
What about your family? Are they in the business too?
No. Although there's certainly plenty of lawyers and financial advisors and so on in the business. But no, they all have their own lives, and we're very pleased, quite frankly, with that. I actually have a wife who's a teacher for 42 years, so I take a lot of my values from her.
What is the website?
Optifor.com, OPTIFOUR.com.
Thanks for listening to this Business Spotlight.
And your name is?
Jim Matthews.
And Jim, which organization are you with?
I'm with the National Association of Railroad Passengers.
And what is the National Association of Railroad Passengers?
We are the oldest and the largest nonprofit organization representing the voice of passengers around the United States, people who take trains for work and for play.
So what do you like about your job?
I like the fact that we can make a difference, and we can make a difference right away.
How can you make a difference? What are you talking about?
The first 3 weeks I was on the job, we were able to make a real impact on the late trains problem that was snarling everything in this past summer. The Surface Transportation Board said they had not heard from passengers, and it was hard for them to take action, and we gave them 1,300 passenger reactions in 72 hours.
Wow. So you really were able to make a difference. Why does this job turn you on?
Again, it's always made a difference in my life to have volunteers. I've been involved in volunteerism of one sort or another since I was a kid. Mm-hmm. And I've been working in industry in an executive role, and this opportunity came along to be part of a volunteer organization. And I thought, this will be a good chance.
Wow. So you're really helping you're the voice of the organization. This organization is helping railroad passengers.
Correct.
What is the website address of the organization?
NARPRail.org.
Let me have that one more time.
NARPRail.org.
And your name again?
Jim Matthews.
And the name of the organization?
Is the National Association of Railroad Passengers.
And this has been your Business Spotlight.
We're back, and you're listening to Executive Leaders Radio. This is your host, Dana Theis, with my co-hosts, Mark Cohen, Katie Jordan, Mike Mercurio, Joe Applebaum, and Lauren Rizzo. Next up, we have Dennis Kelly, CEO of AT Solutions. Dennis, what is AT Solutions?
AT Solutions is a government contractor. We support the national security industry, national security customers. Our focus is on counterterrorism, and we do that for federal, state, and local level in customers.
And you found the company?
No. I came into the company in 2008, joined the company after a private equity group bought the company, and joined as the COO of the company.
That's right. And you mentioned that you were you are a good team leader, which you've managed to build into the success of this company. But your interest in your ability in team leadership started very early in life. You're the oldest?
I'm the oldest of five.
And why did you have to lead this team of children early in life?
Well, my parents got divorced when I was 12, so I needed to be kind of the man of the house, so to speak. So I was, as the eldest sibling, I kind of ruled the roost, I guess you could say.
Mm-hmm. And you described, too, that you had a very important mentor in your life.
I did. In high school, I met a gentleman by the name of Joe Vaden, Commander Joe Vaden. He was a retired naval officer. And he got me interested into the Navy Junior ROTC program, and it was a real turning point in my life.
What did you learn back as a JROTC that you find yourself using in your leadership style today?
Really, leading people. I learned a lot in terms of how do you effectively lead people. You have to walk in their shoes. You have to understand what their challenges are and help them overcome those challenges. I learned that in high school in the ROTC program and later in the Navy.
Dennis, I want to back up just to the decision to join the high school junior ROTC, because there are a lot of folks that met the commander and didn't join. What is it about you that made you want to join?
I think I was really looking for a strong male figure in my life, really someone to kind of give me direction, and Joe Vaden did that for me. So I think that's what I was seeking out, and Joe filled that gap for me.
And you mentioned that you'd been close to your father before the divorce.
Right.
And he did not live in the same community. What were you doing with your father back that made you so close before you were 12?
Well, my dad was a truck driver, and he used to take me on the road with him.
Sitting in the big truck?
Absolutely, sitting in the big truck. And in the early days, he didn't have a sleeper, meaning there wasn't a place to sleep. So I used to sleep on a toolbox that he'd have on the right in front of me. I'd make my own little bed. I have fond memories of it. It was pretty neat.
That sounds like a lot of fun.
It was a lot of fun. The only bad part was the country music. It used to make me physically ill. But today I love country music, so go figure.
That's interesting. Is there country music playing in the halls of your company now?
No, I don't think most of my folks would put up with that.
So you mentioned that you were in the Navy. And did the Navy provide a stability that you didn't have in your childhood?
In a sense, it did. I think it started through the ROTC program. I was in high school, but the Navy gave me really a sense of discipline, a sense of direction, and really, really helped set the foundation for my professional life.
What kind of leader are you today?
I consider myself a participative leadership style. I certainly seek input from my team on a regular basis, but I think I take that input and translate it into action. I don't believe in leadership by committee. But I do believe in getting the input of your people, and I do that on a regular basis.
When you described your job as a mentor being very important, as a mentor leader, what does a mentor leader look like?
Well, I really think that's helping people achieve their goals and helping really get the most out of them to help the company achieve its goals. So I spent a lot of time making sure I select the right people for my team, but then once they're in place, helping them achieve their goals.
Dennis, before you came into your current company, the private equity firm saw something in you that they liked, and you'd worked with them before, but what is it about you that they decided you were the right person for this job, not somebody else?
Well, I think my drive, my real interest in growth, in taking something and growing it to its fullest potential. I had that experience with this private equity group at Antion International, and I think they saw that I was the right person to help transition this company from a small business to today we're a large business, almost $200 million in revenue.
I'm curious, what is the first time you felt pride in something that you've accomplished, particularly when you were younger?
Pride in something I accomplished. I think helping my dad, who really got a junker kind of a Ford Mustang, and helping him get it ready to get on the road because he, you know, it was going to be my car. So I think we worked together on that, and getting that car on the road was kind of my first big accomplishment. It was a lot of fun.
How many years did you drive that car?
I drove that car until I wrecked it. 4 years. I got a good 4 years out of it.
Is there a good story around the wreck?
Well, yeah, I was in Florida. I was interviewing at Disney for a job, and the roads there at Disney, if you've never been there, it's a very slick kind of surface, and we got a little bit of rain, and I rear-ended a really nice Thunderbird.
Did you get the job?
No, I didn't get the job.
I was curious what the job was.
It was really just a general park attendant kind of job. I was looking for a summer job, and I think the funny part was the policeman that came to respond to the scene had a Mickey Mouse badge on, and I thought that was really funny. So,
too bad we didn't have cell phones back then. You could have posted it to Facebook.
Absolutely.
I'm curious. You said something earlier about your mentor in JROTC who really gave you tough love, and I'm wondering if you can describe, you know, what did tough love, what did it look like? What did it look like to get tough love, and what did it feel like then, and what does it feel like now?
Right. Well, I think two things come to mind. One, he wanted, Joe Vaden wanted to see my report card every semester, and if I had bad grades on it, I heard from Joe, and he certainly gave me the tough love, and that really, I think, helped prepare me for my college education, you know, my MBA, that discipline of, you know, you got to be accountable. I think the other time, you know, I guess like some high school kids can do, I experimented with alcohol and had some alcohol under the bleachers at a football game in my senior year, and Commander Vaden caught me, and that wasn't a good night. He read me the riot act and gave me some extra military instruction, as we call it in the military, and turned me around.
Dennis, would it be fair to say that the defining experience in your life was being in the Navy?
I think it was. I mean, I really think that set the stage. You know, the concept of service, serving your country, leading people. Yeah, I think that's certainly a turning point for me.
I hope this is a question you can answer. Do you think it would be best for all young people today to be able to get that experience and to, if you will, grow up?
I don't think the military is necessarily for everyone. I just base that on my own experience. I have a son who's a naval officer, and it's really been a great experience for him. I have another son who started down the path of an Army ROTC scholarship and decided it wasn't for him. So I think it depends on the individual, and it depends what your goals are and where you want to go. But I think it's certainly a great foundation.
So is it tougher to run a company or to be a father?
I think there's a lot of similarities, but I think it's probably tougher to be a father.
What are the similarities?
Well, I think the similarities are, you know, there's mentoring, you know, so you're mentoring your kids to you know, realize their full potential. You're mentoring your employees and your people for the same purpose. But I think being a father, the stakes are so much higher. I mean, really, you know, if you're running a company, it's business, and I think as we talked about earlier, you know, things work, some things don't work, but you can't have your kids not work. I mean, that's, you know, failure is not an option, and so I think the stakes are higher as mm-hmm. a father.
If you had advice to give to your father in retrospect, now that you're a father, what do you want to thank him for, and what do you want to wish other fathers could all hear?
Well, my dad said something to me when I was probably on one of those trips on the truck. He said to me, "Don't do what I'm doing." He said, "It's a very tough life. Get your education, go to school, and you know you'll be very happy that you did." So I think that advice from my dad, if I could have given that advice to my dad before he went down his path, if you will, of his career choices, I probably would have said the same thing back to him.
Mm-hmm. What would you say to your mom?
What I would say to my mom is, you know, kind of go for the gold, so to speak. My mom started off as a waitress, but realized later in life that she actually had a lot of sales skills, and she got into the insurance business. And I think if she had done that earlier in her life, I think her life would have turned out a lot different, more, you know, in a different way, I think.
Are you more like your mom or your dad?
I've got both my mom and my dad in me. There are I think clear signs of both, and I don't think I'm any more like one or the other. I think I'm pretty evenly split.
What's the website?
Website is www.a-tsolutions.com.
This is Dana Theis, your host. Don't forget to visit our website, executiveleadersradio.com. I'd like to thank my co-hosts, Mark Cohen and Lauren Rizzo, for their great questions in this segment. We'll be back in just a moment right after this Business Spotlight. Here for today's Business Spotlight is Chris Vannetti, Vice President of Contract and Project Staffing Services at Hire Strategy. Chris, what is Hire Strategy?
Hire Strategy is a D.C. Metro-based professional services and staffing firm specializing in information technology placements as well as HR and administrative, sales and marketing, and accounting and finance.
And what do clients love about working with Hire Strategy?
We take an old-school approach to staffing, and what I mean by that is, you know, back in the day before social media and email, it was all about people. And we're one of the few and last firms in this marketplace, probably nationwide, that really interviews in person, takes the time to know their candidates, and 100% takes the time to know their clients, their pushes and pulls, the positives and negatives, to make the right match. So it's truly a consultative approach.
Mm-hmm. What do employees love about working for Hire Strategy?
It's definitely our culture. And the employees that work for us, I think they would all to a person say, we believe in leadership, not management. And that's one of our key mottos. And leading people is a definite thing that we like to do, and we like to do it often.
So what does that mean for a new employee? They get to be a leader?
They can get to be a leader, but they're leader of their own practice, of their own business. We allow them to be entrepreneurial. We allow them to make their own decisions, and we're there to help them along the way, correcting them if need be. But motivation and leadership is the one way that we think that people are going to excel with us.
What do you love most about your job?
I love that I get the opportunity to be a leader and to be entrepreneurial and work with a great bunch of people and a great group of executives along with myself. So it's a great place to be.
What's the website?
The website is www.hirestrategy.com.
Thank you for listening to this Business Spotlight.
And your name is?
My name is Joe Dugo.
Joe, what organization are you with?
I'm with Interstate Moving and Storage and Logistics.
And what do you guys do?
We do it all.
Like what?
We move anything and everything from every point to every point in the world.
That sounds like a pretty complicated operation, actually.
It isn't complicated. People call and they want to move a slot machine to Atlantic City, New Jersey. We'll do it. You need to move your father-in-law back to Britain, we'll move him internationally. You're getting a divorce, we'll move the wife here, we'll move you there.
So what do you enjoy about your job?
I love knocking on that door and seeing what's in the inside because I don't know. Every day I get to see four or five different people with different aspirations, different everything.
So you're in a business development role. Your job is to bring in new business.
I'm an old soldier.
What's that?
An interstate has a tough job to do.
Yeah.
If they need it done, they send Joe Dugo. That's me. 35 years in the business to get the job done correctly.
So you're the guy. You're all about relationships and getting stuff.
You're absolutely correct. When I get in that door, it ain't about pricing. It's about talking. It's about details. What do you need? How can I solve them?
Boy, you know how to close a deal. What's the website address?
The website is invan.com.
Let me have that one more time.
It would be invan.com.
We've been speaking with, what's your name again?
My name is Joe Dugo.
And the name of the organization
is Interstate Moving and Storage.
And this has been your Business Spotlight.
We're back, and you're listening to Executive Leaders Radio. This is your host, Dana Theis, with my co-hosts, Mark Cohen, Lauren Rizzo, Joe Applebaum, Katie Jordan, and Mike Mercurio. Next up, we have Bill Millward, President and CEO of Addix Corporation. Bill, what is Addix Corporation?
First of all, Dana, thank you for having us on the show today. Addix Corporation is a professional services firm providing information and management solutions to the federal government. We support about 10 different agencies, two-thirds in the civilian, federal, and about a third in the national security arena.
How big or small is the company today?
We're at 200 employees. I started the firm in 2002 as a one person sitting in the back of a server room. So it's been a good ride and have great folks on board.
Why start a company? Why this adventure?
It's just one of many adventures in the life's journey, right? So I had a very fine career in the Navy, served 22 years, started off going to the Naval Academy and becoming an engineer, joined the Rickover Nuclear Power Group, and grew up through there and was fortunate enough to have command at sea. So we, you know, my life was about serving the nation, you know, sailing the seven seas and a bunch of different adventures. But, you know, down in my own, you know, dreams, I'd always wanted to start a company. It was something that I thought about from early age. My parents and brothers and sisters all run their own businesses, so it's part of my DNA, I think.
So where did you grow up?
I grew up in the San Francisco Bay Area in the, you know, Silicon Valley before it was Silicon Valley. So I was a middle child of four. My older brother and sister are twins, and my younger sister is 3 years younger than myself.
You told us a great story about being 8 years old and deciding you wanted to go to the Naval Academy. Why does an 8-year-old want to go to the Naval Academy?
Well, my you know, I always looked up to my father. He was an engineer. My mom was actually a real estate agent. So my father was kind of the analytical person in the family. My mom was the people person. So there was a nice relationship there. But my father was also a prisoner of war during World War II, and he was rescued by MacArthur's outfits and made a lot of good friends with Navy people during that time. And one day we were happened to be watching the old snowy black and white TV with the rabbit ear antennas and saw the fleet come in underneath the Golden Gate Bridge. And I said, "What's that, Dad?" And he goes, "That's the United States Navy returning from deployment." So, well, that looks pretty cool. And so, how do you do that? And he says, "You got to go to the Naval Academy." So I didn't know what the Naval Academy was at the time, but that's what I set my sights on. So it's
somehow
kind of funny.
Well, it's not easy to get into the Naval Academy, so it must have taken a lot of work.
It did, but then, you know, that's just a different story too.
So how does this desire to find adventure in your life, how do you apply that to your work and to your success running a business? How is a business an adventure?
Because I think there's always new unfoldings that present yourself with challenges, and it may be customer challenges, it may be employee challenges, it may be just trying to take a business to something that was nothing and growing it into something. I think at heart it's really having a building spirit, and that's what this nation, I think, is built on, is entrepreneurs like many of you in the room here are just committed to that, and it's just part of our, you know, I think American culture, which is really cool.
So, Bill, most entrepreneurs, as I understand the statistics, don't actually succeed in business. And I'm curious, did you reach a point somewhere along the way where you were saying, "I'm not sure this is the right thing for me"?
Success is a mindset. If I ever had that kind of mindset, I would have definitely failed. You know, somebody said, I don't know who to attribute this to, but if you think you can or you think you can't, you're right. So think about that. So if your mindset is, I'm going to succeed, then, you know, you got a pretty good chance. Now, having said that, I've had many near disasters in growing this business, and, you know, decisions that we've made that, you know, in retrospect, we shouldn't have gone down the path. I'm not talking about, you know, making poor choices in whether we should pursue a certain opportunity or not, you know, and, you know, requires investment of capital and that kind of thing. But you learn from that, you recover from that, and you charge ahead. That's all you can do.
Bill, as an 8-year-old boy, seeing the Navy coming back to San Francisco is one thing, and then going to the Naval Academy another thing. Staying in it for a career, how did you decide to make it a career choice?
Because I was having a lot of fun, you know. I was in the surface Navy, so you know, we would literally sail the seven seas, and to this date, my wife wants to travel, and I've been to pretty much every place in the world, so mm-hmm. there's that part of that adventure. But we were also doing a more important thing, was serving our nation, keeping it safe. And so, you know, one of the biggest challenges, and, you know, folks here in this room have, you know, been in the military, you know, defending the nation. and that's hard to do. And so, but it was an opportunity, and you know, we stepped into that.
Bill, Admiral Ridcover was a tough customer. Can you give us an interesting story? Have you met the admiral?
Oh, I've met him a couple of times.
Can you give us an interesting story? Because I understand he was quite a character.
Well, he was not only a character, but just he was one of these individuals that really helped you realize your potential, I think, and by challenging what was within you and made you live up to certain ideals that I think are important today. But I mean, I think many folks have a similar kind of story of going in for the interviews and on the slanted chairs that set you off kilter, asking you questions, and then when you didn't answer the question properly, he would throw you out. His question to me was, "What do you want to do in 15 years?" And I said, "Well, Admiral, I'd like to have your job." And he goes, "Well, how long do you think it's going to take for you to get here?" And I said, "Well, I could probably do that in 10 to 20 years, sometime in that fine time frame." By this time, he'd already been doing this for about 40 years, right? So he goes, "Get out of my office!" And so I spent the next 4 hours in a closet space and was accepted finally.
I understand that your naval career culminated with Warship Command. How is operating a warship similar or dissimilar to running a business?
I think actually there's quite a few parallels. Sailing a warship or any, you know, commanding a ship, you know, you're underway, independent. Certainly you have certain tethers and everything, but you know, you have to make a lot of decisions, and the decisions really are generated or I guess confirmed by the folks you have with you, and having a solid chief petty officer mess who are providing that kind of leadership underneath you and supporting you, I think, is important. I think having, you know, developing your quality junior officers as well as making the right kind of decisions are similar.
Bill, you said that when you got out of the military, you had quite a career there, and now you come into the private sector, and it was a little bit of a shock. And I'm thinking there's a lot of people out there for one reason or another who are in a transition and have to reinvent themselves and who they think they are. What advice would you give to all the people in the process of reinventing themselves right now?
I think it's the thing to do is not necessarily, don't necessarily just look and do an inventory of your own capabilities, okay, what your past experiences. You got to really dig deep on what your skills are and focus on your skills versus your gaps. If you start focusing on your gaps, then you're going to be kind of, you know, averaging those things up. But if you really focus on what your skills are, then working with those and developing those into a new capability that's marketable, that provides a service of some sort of value, is important.
What's the website?
www.addxcorp.com.
This is your host, Dana Theus. I would like to thank all of our sponsors for asking great questions. Lauren Rizzo with Cressa, Joe Applebaum with Potomac Companies, Kate Jordan with Verisolve, Mark Cohen with Opti4, and Mike Mercurio with Offutt Kerman. And I'd like to thank our guests. Mark, would you do the honors?
Sure. We started today with Linda Mann, the co-founder and president of the Youth Quest Foundation. Then we spoke with Mark Sissel, CEO of Katz Abosch. Third was Dennis Kelly, CEO of AT Solutions, and we just heard from Bill Millward, President and CEO of Addicts Corporation.
I'd also like to thank Offutt Kerman for hosting us in their beautiful Tyson's Corner offices. And last but very not least, I'd like to thank you, our listening audience, for listening, because otherwise we wouldn't have a radio show. Don't forget to visit our website, executiveleadersradio.com, to learn more about our executive leaders. Have a great day. Bye-bye.
Thank you for tuning in. You've been listening to Executive Leaders Radio, the region's premier radio show highlighting local executive leaders. We hope you've enjoyed the show here on 1500 AM. You can learn more about Executive Leaders Radio by visiting executiveleadersradio.com or tune in next time right here on 1500 AM. That's executiveleadersradio.com.
WFED Washington, WWFD Frederick, WWTFM HD2 Manassas, WTLP FM HD2 Braddock Heights Frederick, the Washington, D.C. home of Navy Athletics. Listen each week for Tech Tuesday on Federal News Radio. Every Tuesday, we zero in on how technology inspires innovation. Tuesday mornings at 11, it's Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy, the latest on products that help bring policy to life. Then Tuesday afternoons at 12:30, join Federal News Radio's Jason Miller for Ask the CIO. Federal News Radio's DoD Wednesday. At 3, DoD reporter Jared Serbu hosts On DoD, a discussion with senior managers about how the department meets its mission. At 4, in-depth host Francis Rose brings you Pentagon Solutions, a smart discussion on the issues and challenges of the defense community. Plus daily DoD updates, mornings and afternoons, Monday through Friday. DoD Wednesday on federalnewsradio.com and 1500 AM. This paid commercial